Shugyokai, where a single waka gets the philological treatment most doctoral theses only dream of receiving.
Today we're working through Latex Space Coyote's close reading of Ueshiba Morihei's 12th doka, a poem about breath, yielding, and what it actually means to act in accordance with the kami. Let's start with the poem itself and what the translation work is trying to do.
The core question this post is wrestling with is deceptively simple. How do you carry a classical Japanese waka, one dense with Shinto cosmology, archaic grammar, and layered wordplay, into English without flattening it into a motivational poster?
The translation offered reads, "Kanagata, yielding to the breath of heaven and earth, devote this heart-mind wholly to the kami, O stalwart-hearted warrior." That rendering keeps Kanagata untranslated, which turns out to be a deliberate choice with real stakes.
Right, and the reason that matters is that the moment you reach for a single English phrase, you've already picked a side in a theological argument.
Exactly. The commentary explains that Kanagata carries two simultaneous poles, ontologically, as the kami is, and relationally, attuned to the kami's intent. The post puts it this way: in accordance with the kami emphasizes relation and volition. As the kami is emphasizes mode of being. In the kami's own character brings the etymological kara-gara into the foreground. Retaining kanagata in the principal translation and allowing the commentary to superimpose both meanings preserves the greatest range.
So the untranslated word is doing the most translation work.
That's the argument, and it connects to the morphology. Kamu plus na plus kara, where kara here isn't the because particle or the from particle, but the element meaning inherent character or proper nature, the same element that survives in hitogata, personal character, and iegata, family standing. The Nihon Shoki gloss the post cites makes the doubleness explicit. Kanagara means both following the way of the kami and the way of the kami being present of itself. Those aren't two definitions. They're the outward and inward faces of the same operation.
Which means the whole poem is structured around a paradox that the translation has to honor rather than resolve.
And that paradox runs straight through the two key verbs, makase and tsukuse, to entrust and to devote fully, share the same final sound, say, but belong to different conjugational systems and carry opposite grammatical functions. One releases control and carries the sentence forward, the other commands and brings it to resolution.
So the poem is enacting the paradox in its own grammar. You can't yield and give everything simultaneously, except apparently you can, and the verb endings are the proof.
The post frames it this way. This is neither drifting passively with events nor forcing the world through self-power. Only at the point of entrustment does wholehearted devotion become possible.
The analysis also traces how the poem's syntax refuses to close. The second line ends with the particle ni, waiting for its predicate. The fourth ends with o, waiting for its predicate. The breath folds at the third line metrically, but grammatically it flows straight through. The post calls this the respiratory design of yielding to the breath, the simultaneity of cut and continuation. And then there's the one extra mora in line 4, kami eno kokoro o, which is technically a metrical defect, but the post argues it's doing something more specific than that.
The jiamari makes the heart's direction into an attribute of the heart itself. Kami eno kokoro isn't just the heart offered to the kami. It's the heart whose defining quality is that it is turned toward the kami. And in recitation, that extra beat lengthens the breath immediately before the imperative tsukuse. The excess mora becomes an excess of breath, refusing to let that heart be uttered too quickly.
The whole poem is a breathing exercise disguised as a doctrinal statement.
The closing masurao is the final piece of that design. In prose order, you'd address the warrior first, then issue the command. The poem reverses it. The imperative fires first, and the name of the one who must bear it arrives last. Masurao isn't the title of a completed warrior. It's the name that becomes available only after passing through both Makase Tsutsu and Tsukuse.
That's a very different kind of strength than the Edo Kokugaku version of Masurabari was selling.
The post makes exactly that point. Traditional Masurabari implied raw, unyielding martial force. Ueshiba's Masurao is explicitly anchored to Makasetsu, yielding, entrusting, soft cosmic blending. The strength is redefined as the capacity not to obstruct the breath of heaven and earth as it passes through relation, posture, and technique.
Which brings the whole doka back to the practice floor. This isn't philosophy happening above the body. It's philosophy happening as the body breathes.
What the post ultimately argues is that the poem doesn't communicate a teaching about breath. It acts on breath directly, in recitation, in the dojo.
The next poem in the series will have a lot to live up to. A single waka that is simultaneously a grammar lesson, a Shinto cosmology, a speech act, and a breathing exercise is a hard act to follow.